out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 7th of August 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. Well, Carolyn Jaeger is having some time off, so we are welcoming another special guest to us today, someone who was on a couple of weeks back talking about lawfare and legal cases against him, and today he's going to be talking about Puerto Rico, which is a country I really don't know that much about, but he's of the opinion that it's something that our listeners need to learn about, particularly Americans. And I am, of course, talking about Matthew Heimbach. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, Sven. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I really don't know much about Puerto Rico. I know this crazy, deranged Cortez creature. She's from there. I mean, she looks like a demented 12-year-old to me, partially cross-eyed and comes out with all these crazy ideas. But that's about all I know about Puerto Rico. And I didn't realize it was part of America. I thought she was an illegal immigrant or an asylum seeker or something like that. I really didn't realize it was part of America, and I'm not sure what, you know, just why is it important to Americans to learn about this place?
Okay, so Puerto Rico is actually a really sort of interesting kind of leftover of 20th century American imperialism, right? You know, the sun never set on the British Empire. Everyone, you know, knows about Europeans that had colonies all around the world, but America has always kind of prided itself on not being necessarily a colonial power, but we know that that's not true. So Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricans are all considered American citizens. They have been since 1917, and they have freedom of movement between their island, which is about 1,000 miles off the coast of Florida, and the mainland. So essentially what that means, out of a several million person population, at any point in time, a Puerto Rican can pick up from Puerto Rico and they can come to the United States. So why does that matter? Well, the big population of Puerto Ricans, I mean, there's a lot in New York and such, but especially in Florida. So what I wanted to kind of talk about today is about the fact that American politics, and I'm not just talking about like a local race or a race when it comes to electing a representative or even a senator, but the presidential election in 2020 that's coming up very easily could be decided by a hurricane, which might sound a little crazy, but we have this situation where, of course, we had a hurricane in Puerto Rico back in 2017. So it was horribly destructive, right? The largest power outage in American history, because the grid was not properly maintained. There's a lot of corruption, which is a big problem in Puerto Rico, because it's in this weird status, right? It's not having the same necessary oversight as an American state. But they have a very unique status where they sort of rule themselves, but they're also kind of basically a colony. And this goes back to a fight that's been going on for a very long time, where there are Puerto Ricans who are pro-independence, several of which actually that I know are National Socialists. And they want Puerto Rico to be independent of the United States. They want to be able to govern their own affairs and they want to be able to fix their country. There are a lot of Puerto Ricans that they kind of like their status right now, where they can kind of get the benefit of being protected by the United States, getting billions of dollars from the United States. But at the same time, they also don't have to pay taxes on income that they make in Puerto Rico. So that's kind of a big boom that they get there. They can kind of have their cake and eat it too, while others want statehood. And of course, we know if statehood were to be done, the island would go overwhelmingly Democrat based on polls. So that would also, you know, change the Senate from being 100 members to 102. It would change the House probably a little bit, where Puerto Rico would have, you know, Montana has one representative for a state that's basically like the size of a European country. Puerto Rico would have several representatives. It would tilt the balance. And there's a lot going on. So I could start at the beginning, but where would you like to kind of start evaluating why Puerto Rico matters to you?
Well, is it so it's part of America, but is it kind of like a third world country? Is it a sort of similar to Haiti and Mexico? Are they mestizos, Latinos? Basically, what are they racially, and what is the state of the country?
Well, demographically, it's very unique. Of course, it changed hands during colonialism. There was a lot of push between the different powers, but it was primarily a Spanish colony, right, for a very, very long time. And what happens with that is we have a very large spectrum of the population. If you look at, for instance, their most recent governor, Ricardo Rossello, if you were to tell me that he came from Italy, or if he came from Greece or something like that, I would believe it. Okay. So we've got, you know, just like you have in Mexico, there's a very large percentage of what we consider white folks. There's a very large percentage of mestizos. There's the descendants of the African slaves that were brought there. So it's very much kind of like an island Mexico in a lot of ways, where traditionally we see generally the white population is kind of running the affairs of most of the government, but they don't seem to have a whole lot of care for the people. And the corruption is a really big deal. So that's kind of a black mark on our people, I would say, is that, you know, while traditionally, if you look at media, you look at all the different kind of government ministers, a lot of them are white. But the corruption is a very, very big problem, where right now Puerto Rico has nearly a 50% poverty rate. And it's considered kind of a radical proposal that some of the lawmakers wanted to be raising the wages of teachers to a level that's something like half that of the average American mainland teacher. So it's very poor. Right now, they've almost got $100 billion in debt, which, you know, for the United States, which has trillions of dollars of debt, that might not sound like a lot. But due to the unique status of Puerto Rico, they're not allowed to file bankruptcy. So there's this problem of where there's no money. The infrastructure has fallen apart. It's been destroyed by hurricanes as of late. And yet there really isn't any ability to kind of fix the problem. So we've kind of got there's two decisions in front of us, independence or statehood. And if statehood comes, they want statehood because they could get additionally tens of billions of dollars a year of American taxpayer money for infrastructure, for education, for healthcare, for all the perks that you get for being essentially an American state. There's a lot that want to be able to take this majority non-white population and essentially allow there to be a full push to have the American taxpayer subsidize them.
What sort of things do they actually produce over there? There must be something that they produce, or I mean, is it, what do they do? Chocolate? You know, there must be something that they produce. How do they get themselves into so much debt?
Well, agriculture products are the primary export, of course, but one of the problems is when you've got a population that's of a kind of a different subset of America, right? If you want really cheap agricultural products, you're going to go to the ones that don't have the American standards for labor laws and stuff like that. So they're kind of, I mean, you know, it's an exploitative process for international capitalism regardless, but they don't have a lot of industry. There's not a whole lot of natural resources. Except for agricultural products, which they can be undercut by other, you know, island nations and things like that. So they're kind of in this problem where they've just been spiraling in debt more and more and more. And eventually it's going to require some sort of massive bailout by the American taxpayer if we're going to maintain the kind of the ownership, for lack of a better term, of Puerto Rico. And of course, I don't think that this benefits white Americans. I don't think it benefits black Americans. I don't think it even benefits Puerto Ricans, because they're not able to have control over their own destiny, because their constitution, while they do have it, back in the 90s, a United States federal court said that the Puerto Rican constitution could be unilaterally repealed at any point in time and replaced by Washington, D.C. with any rules and regulations that the Washington government wanted. So on one hand, they're not able to actually govern their own affairs. On the other hand, we're not really able to necessarily tell them 100% what to do. And what the cost is more and more money, more and more suffering, and a huge influx of Puerto Ricans that are leaving Puerto Rico to come to the mainland for better economic opportunities, better education, better access to healthcare and stuff like that. And that's going to tip the 2020 election, I think very clearly. Florida was very, very close in 2016. And I have so many critiques of Donald Trump that would be a dozen and a half shows in and of itself. But the thing is, when you're adding 200, 300, 400,000 people between 2016 and 2020, what that is going to lead to is the very narrow margin that Republicans were able to carry the state in 2016 is going to then turn into, I think, the state going Democrat.
Well, this is a problem, isn't it? I mean, we talk a lot about illegal immigration and the threats that illegal immigration bring, and we also talk about legal immigration. But what you've actually got there is you've got essentially a foreign people that are already Americans. So they can come over any time they like. Is that right? They can just come over at any time and just stay in America and claim welfare?
Yeah, they are 100% American citizens and have been since 1917. So what that means, at any point in time, you can just get on a train, get on a plane, get on a boat, get on whatever you want. And if you can make it to the American mainland, there's no visa process or anything like that. You are an American citizen. So that means you can come and compete for American jobs. You are instantly eligible for any sort of benefits in the state where you reside. And it's a huge financial drain on the state of Puerto Rico, or, you know, on Puerto Rico, because they're seeing a lot of their population leaving their island nation, essentially. And then, of course, you've got a huge cost of what you're getting with places like Florida that are paying out a lot of benefits or have additional costs for maintaining the population. So it really, nobody's winning in this sort of arrangement.
What's the general opinion on it then from the politicians on the American side? Do the Republicans have a general majority opinion on Puerto Rico and what to do with it? Or the Democrats have a different opinion?
Yeah, the Republicans have been split, but the Democrats overwhelmingly want statehood. So what that's going to mean, of course, is if this is going to be then a fully fledged state, then that is going to allow two new senators, which is going to then push the Republican-held Senate, which is a very narrow margin, into being in Democrat hands. It's going to add more representatives, which are going to be then, of course, probably overwhelmingly Democrat, because the party that is currently governing, the New Progressive Party, of which the former governor was the leader of, is aligned with the Democrats. So the Democrats have every sort of push. I mean, it's just like illegal immigration, right? Like, why do they want open borders? Because you can bring in people, you can do amnesties, and then you can push the demographics farther, but then also win these elections. But Puerto Rico is already in that status. The more and more people who leave the island. So on a certain point, like, if you were to get really cynical, that why is the reconstruction after these hurricanes not being done to improve the lives of Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico? Part of me thinks, looking at the evidence and the huge influx of what this will mean for the Democrats on a national scale, why rebuild the island instead of pushing more and more voters to come to important swing states that you have? Because there's also growing Puerto Rican populations in the American Southwest and such. So these key areas that they want to win, that they're already getting the illegal immigrants into, but illegal immigrants can't vote. So instead, bring American citizens in, who, of course, are majority Latino and vote Democrat. Just bring them in, and there's no process. You don't have to go ahead and do DACA. You don't have to go ahead and do all these Dreamer programs and stuff like that. As soon as they set foot in a state and register to vote, they're ready to go. And the very narrow margins by which Donald Trump was able to win in 2016 can be totally blown away by pulling as many people from Puerto Rico here, which, as I said before, is really bad for Puerto Rico itself, because you've got, you know, the people who have the money to leave and set up a new life are the people they need to rebuild their island, to manage it, to run businesses and things like that. So both ends of the spectrum are suffering. But I think American politicians, there's really not a huge position on the Republican side, but the Democrats are incredibly dedicated to getting as many voters brought in, registered, and then to destroy any sort of remaining hold that the white population has in these key swing states.
Are they moving to the swing states when they come in? Are they, you know, sort of heading for there naturally? Are they being advised that that's where they should go to? What's the pull to get them to go to these areas that are swing states? Is it a conscious desire of these Puerto Ricans to do that, or are they being encouraged to move there?
Well, I think it's a couple things. I think there's a big push because places like South Florida, which I've had the pleasure of visiting. I mean, it's a great place, but South Florida is not America in any sort of traditional sense that you would identify. You can live your entire life in places like Miami and never speak a word of English, never really assimilate to any form of American culture because there's such a large population. So Florida alone has had 200,000 Puerto Ricans settle within 2017, which is a huge, huge number. So I think primarily it's kind of like a colony, right? I mean, whether it's in Germany or Sweden, if you're a Somali or a Syrian or someone and you end up in Sweden, well, you're probably not going to go move to a majority white neighborhood. You're going to move around people like yourself. And then you tell people back home, hey, it's basically like home, but better, right? Because there's more opportunity, there's more access, there's more money and all these things. So then more and more people come. So it really is a demographic push, very similar to what we see in Europe. I mean, when it comes to the increasing Islamic population in Britain, of which you're well aware, you know, they once a neighborhood is set up, once a region is set up, then more and more come there and then demographically take over and then politically take over. So essentially it creates a political fifth column within a region that keeps growing, growing and growing. And there's not a whole lot at this point we can do about it other than granting full independence to Puerto Rico so they'd no longer be American citizens. But there isn't really in the American mainland a big push for that because the Democrats are benefiting. The Republicans don't really think like a position of secession, because if Puerto Rico were to declare independence, well, what does that mean? Well, then anyone else could hypothetically begin to declare independence, whether that's American Indian tribes, whether that's a white population, whether that's black separatists in the American Black Belt. So I don't think the Republicans, the federal government, really want to support independence. But I do have to say it's very interesting that there is an independence party in Puerto Rico that's dedicated to not only just being independent, but national pride and identity. So we as nationalists should be, I think, supporting them in the Puerto Rican Independence Party.
And how successful are the Puerto Rican Independence Party? Are they well liked over there? Have they got any chance of getting into power? What's the politics like over there?
Well, and this is what gets really interesting. In the most recent island-wide elections, they got close to 10% of the vote, which, you know, is, of course, not a mandate. But it does go to show that there is a lot of support. And, of course, they're aligned with a lot of the nationalist, anti-Yankee imperialist movements throughout Latin America. But there's a political shift happening in Puerto Rico, which is why this first came to me, because the governor who was elected, Ricardo Rossello, he has resigned as of just a few days ago, because he was in a Telegram group chat with all of his ministers and stuff like that, which was leaked. And he said a lot of things in there, some which, have been deemed misogynist, some which have been deemed not necessarily racist, but more uncaring. And there's been protests where a general strike essentially shut down the island for several days. But, you know, when the mainstream political party, which has really had a stranglehold on Puerto Rican politics for a long time, has proven itself at the highest level of being corrupt, and the governor was mocking his own citizens as they were dying from the hurricane, as they were, having to bash open coconuts just to get clean water. And it's been a huge scandal that the American mainland donated tremendous amounts of bottled water and stuff like that for the hurricane victims. But the local government didn't disperse them. They left them in fields for, now 2 years so that they could, while people were dying from lack of clean water, the clean water was just sitting there and it wasn't being dispersed. And the governor was actively mocking his citizens as they were dying, as they were starving, as they didn't have medical care, as hospitals couldn't keep the lights on. So there's this huge push. Essentially the entire island, close to half the population, was in the streets marching to call for a resignation, that this could be the moment where if the American federal government lackeys, of the new Progressive Party are, you know, just so uncaring about their citizens, they'll let them die and laugh at them. This could be the moment where an independence party could push forward and say, hey, we don't need Washington, D.C. We don't need this political elite, because the former governor comes from a political family, a dynasty, as a lot of things are, and say, hey, we need something new. So this could be the moment where supporting independence, again, is not only going to benefit us, but it's going to benefit them. And they need a political change. When half your population's out in the streets, that means people are ready for a change.
Why on earth would he just leave that water there to go rotten? I mean, what was the point in doing that? I mean, you can understand in Africa when they send this aid over there, there are middlemen that then sell it on to basically make a profit. But to just leave all the water there, I mean, surely there must have been a reason for that, why he did that, do you know?
No one has been able to come up with a good reason other than incompetence and corruption. That they literally were just watching their citizens die, which, of course, you've got citizens of a very diverse, you know, ethnic spectrum and stuff like that. So I don't think it was bigotry. I don't think it was any of the buzzwords, of course, the media would come up with. I just think it was pure incompetence, where these political dynasties are so dug into Puerto Rican politics. I mean, as they are with, like, say, the Kennedy family or something like that, or the Bush family in the United States. But, I mean, just pure incompetence, where it was brought. We paid for it. The American taxpayer paid for it. And charities raised huge sums of money for clothing and medicine and water and food. And that was just brought in to help these people that were suffering and dying. I mean, it was horrendous how many people lost their lives in this hurricane. But the government was just uncaring. I mean, that's the darkness of I think man's inhumanity is just indifference to the suffering of others. And the political class just let the citizens die. And then, you know, again, it is mocking them while they're doing it. And so people are angry. So this needs to be the moment where people can push on and say, hey, we need something different, because even when we, you know, support them and help them, it's not getting to the people. And it's not, like you said, it's not some guerrilla commander who won't let, you know, things through. It's a guy in a business suit. It's, you know, in a $5,000 suit with a $500 haircut, who's just letting his people die. And that's why he's resigned. And the entire political cabinet of, like, who was going to replace him and things like that. Basically, the people are calling for a clean sweep of Puerto Rican politics. So this is hopefully where nationalists, real nationalists, could be able to assert themselves as a different option than the status quo.
What is it the people are asking for then? Are they asking for everyone that's in government to step down? Are they asking for a new election? Are they saying they want a new system? What is it they're asking for?
Well, a couple different things. Yes, there is a huge push based on the protests. And of course, almost everything's in Spanish, while English is one of the official languages of Puerto Rico. Basically, everything's done in Spanish. I actually have a buddy of mine who was born to a serviceman and his wife that were deployed out in Puerto Rico, and his birth certificate's in Spanish. So, you know, Spanish is the lingua franca. So I've had been running through a lot of translations, and the American media really isn't covering it, which I think is weird. When it comes to China and Hong Kong, that's been on the American media left and right, which is probably a disturbance which to some degree is being supported by the American regime, by the American government. You know, they found arms that had to come from somewhere in Hong Kong, but there's almost no content on the American media about what's going on in Puerto Rico, which is very strange. But yes, there are huge calls during this general strike for new elections. But there's also been a big push. You've seen in banners, signs, and graffiti that's gone up, where people are calling for independence. They want to abolish the system where they have two different houses, bring it into one house. And then what they want to do is have proportional representation. And that would be the first in American politics, to the best of my knowledge, that would bring them into line with, like, a more European system, not British, of course, but a more European system, which that could be huge for nationalists if that were to happen, because then you could have an independence party, instead of winning one or two seats, could have 10, 15, 20% of seats, which could then cause a snowball effect to really change Puerto Rican politics. So it seems like a lot of the people, based on everything I've seen, are calling for dramatic change. They don't just want a new figurehead. They don't just want the same party. They want new elections. And a lot of them seem to want an entirely new system because the current one just isn't working for them.
It's interesting that it is being covered up because it's like what's going on in France at the moment with the Yellow Vest protests and the riots over there. That's all been hidden. I think there's been trouble in Haiti as well. There's been trying to overturn the government there. That's just not being covered by the mainstream media. Now you've got this going on in Puerto Rico. And all we're hearing about is these democracy protesters in Hong Kong that are holding up signs in English. And from what you're saying there, I mean, this is a genuine uprising, and they've got signs in Spanish, and it's not being covered by the American media. But in China, we've got these signs in English, and it's being covered by the media. So they're obviously trying to keep this from the American public, I would guess, by not reporting on it. Would you say that, Matt? They're deliberately keeping it from the American public for some reason?
I think there's no other way to look at it. I mean, if you really evaluate the way American politics work, of course, you've got the progressive stack, right, of whose opinions matter. I mean, the Democratic Socialists of America just had their annual conference where they voted for open borders and all sorts of stuff. But where they try and have, you know, people of color's voices come before white members' voices. OK, but think about this. When you've got half of the population in the streets protesting, getting the governor to resign, I mean, this should be a really big deal. You've got all of these white liberals that suddenly don't seem to have an opinion or don't, you know, couldn't find Puerto Rico on a map. And it does seem like it is very, very deliberate, because think about the precedent this sets. Again, if the American empire, you know, we can meddle in Hong Kong, we can meddle in the Middle East, we can, you know, support so-called NGOs and stuff to try and disrupt things in Putin's Russia. But whenever there's a disruption for the American empire, they don't even want to cover it. And if we can't maintain a basic standard of living, and this is not through, you know, the fault of the people who live there, it's the political class, it's the colonial relationship that the United States has, where they really want to ignore it. Because something that's really interesting is going back to 1978, the UN declared that it was a colonial relationship that existed between the U.S. and Puerto Rico. So, you know, the international community has said, like, these people are to a certain degree being used and abused, and their agricultural products and natural resources are being taken. They're living in squalor for any sort of semblance of American citizens. And, you know, to bring that up, I think would really be a black eye. It would be really a mark on the American regime's sort of perspective that they're the defenders of freedom and empowerment and building people up and hearing the voices of the voiceless and things like that. I think the political class is very much afraid that if it were brought out, that essentially we're still running an empire. We are running a colony right now. The international community says is a colony. It would be a big black mark for Republicans, Democrats, for the whole political class, and that might cause change. So that's why I think the political class and the media doesn't want to cover this.
Is it actually a state? Is it 52 states you have in America? Is Puerto Rico one of those states?
Well, it's 50 states, but we have a very unique status where it's a territory, much like the District of Columbia. So they're allowed, they actually elect a member that can go to Congress, which is called a resident commissioner, but is not allowed to vote. So they get to come hang out, I guess, in Washington, but they don't really have any power. They have their own constitution, and under the Puerto Rico Federal Relations Act of 1950, that they're supposed to have jurisdiction over their land while still being part of the United States to a certain degree. Again, this is the weird status where they're citizens, but they don't have a state. So they, you know, don't, you know, the taxation, even if they're not being directly taxed, they don't have to pay federal income tax. Their resources are still being taken by Washington, D.C. There's still American companies that are there making profits. They pay much lower wages on average than they even have to minimum wage here in the mainland. So they're getting taxation essentially without representation. So it's a very undemocratic model that can only be described as colonial, which I think is very uncomfortable for a lot of Americans of different political stripes to accept that we are a colonial power really one of the last ones in the world, you know, essentially ruling over groups of people that have no connection to us ethnically, culturally, religiously, the background of history, of different, you know, different religions in the mainstream of the United States, but we're still ruling over them and still exploiting them. And, you know, even destroying their island, not rebuilding it, and bringing them away from their homes, tearing them away from their culture so that they can be swing voters in places like Florida, really is a form of exploitation that's being done by the so-called progressive left. So it's a mess. I don't know how else to say it, but it's a mess. And the people who are suffering are the people of Puerto Rico, but then also the American people, the traditional European population that, you know, is seeing, you know, having to compete for jobs, facing lower wages, and having our voices taken away in federal and state elections. So really the only people who are benefiting are the political class.
So really there should be a push to try and stop the Puerto Ricans coming in, stop them coming into these swing states, and encourage them to be independent and perhaps to see themselves more as part of South America and you know, the Spanish part of the Americas and the Spanish speaking part of Americas, the mestizo part, than with the white part. But how you're going to achieve that, I don't know. Do you have any ideas how you can get this to the Republicans or get this to the people that matter, that they need to do this, otherwise they're going to lose their majority?
Well, you know, I think one thing that's interesting is how the federal government has played things. The former FBI director, Louis Free, actually said, this is going back to the 60s, and the independence movement, he said, and I quote, the FBI engaged in egregious illegal action, maybe criminal action, in terms of subverting the nationalists. They used what was known as the counterintelligence program to try and disrupt these nationalists. Because, again, what would benefit everyone in this situation, like you said, is Puerto Rico was allowed to be independent. They have control over their own natural resources. They're not controlled by the Federal Reserve. They'd be able to have their own currency. They'd be able to chart their own destiny. And that would be better for them, but that'd also be better for us. But this goes back now two generations or more, where the FBI and other organizations have been working to disrupt this because it would be bad for the American empire. So I think the one thing that we can really do is there's this big political upheaval as they're looking for change. And of course, I mean, who knows with Trump's Department of Justice and the FBI of what they're going to do. But, you know, this can be the moment to support nationalists there to say, look, we need to you need to push, and this is going to benefit your people. It's going to benefit our people. And hopefully the federal government is not going to engage in their own words, such egregious illegal action against nationalists. But we also should look at that to understand how they disrupt white nationalists, black nationalists, American Indian nationalists, that going back to the 1960s, they will do everything they can to disrupt, dismantle, and destroy nationalist movements, because I really think the American empire is far more fragile than anyone gives it credit for. You know, the CIA said in the 1980s, the Soviet Union would last for decades more, but they didn't know, you know, their rear end from the intelligence reports in front of them when it collapsed. It came out of nowhere. That I don't think these empires are as powerful as they really put off to the rest of the world. So a few Puerto Rican, you know, independence nationalists could begin the unraveling of the American empire. So we should support Puerto Rican independence and look to them and try and help them, because when that first thread gets pulled on the Zionist occupation government, where they start to lose power, where people decide they'd rather be free than live under that boot heel of the financiers and bankers of the Federal Reserve, then that could set a precedent for the rest of us. So it's an exciting time, but one where we also have to keep in our thoughts and prayers, you know, those that might be affected by these domestic surveillance programs and stuff like that want to disrupt nationalists.
All right, it's also good to be pre-warned about what could be just around the corner. As you say, if there's another hurricane, that could totally change the demographics in Florida and totally change the voting of the state and also other areas. So again, that's something that we need to watch out for. Well, thank you very much for that, Matt. I now know a lot more about Puerto Rico than I did before. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
tuned in.